Welcome to this week's edition of the Lockdown featuring T-Cub and the Ball Hawk. Can I get a little? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Special guest this weekend is the man, the myth, the legend, Eli Harrell, my man, my mellow, OG Central. What's good, fam?
Chilling, man. Chilling. Glad to be on.
Cool.
Glad from the 7-5 too. Come on, we gotta attach that, man. He from the 7-5. There we go. No doubt.
Well, see, no. I knew he was going to come with that anyway.
Oh, my bad.
So, you know, done and done.
I got excited.
No doubt. And we have a new segment called Who's the Fan with a special super fan, Drew Cassidy, will be on with us a little bit later to drop in and drop it like it's hot himself. So we'll get to that later. But as we have my man Eli Harrell, fam, what's good, man? What you up to?
Hey, man, training every day. Trying to get back in the fold, man. Recently switched agents. I got a workout here set up soon, you know, with the corona stuff going on. They can't really date yet. But I'm just waiting to get the call so I fly or whatever they're going to do to work me out and go try to earn me a spot, man. And get back in the fold, man, you know.
Yeah, where you standing at right now, Eli?
I'm in Winter Garden, Florida.
Okay. Yeah.
Get that good Florida weather.
It's hot, man. It's hot.
Yeah, bro. Bro, hey, you know, I was there for 16 years, so I know. Orlando area even hotter, though, because it's landlocked. Ain't no breeze coming through.
No water, nothing.
No doubt. All right, so let's jump into some things here. So Let's take you back. We're going to take you back. 2011, 2012, you know, you're doing your thing in high school. I don't even know if people know you a two-sport superstar. Everybody just know the football accolades. They don't even know about that track prowess.
Yeah, he was Carl Lewis.
Long jump.
Yeah.
You know, doing the damn thing. Bro, tell us a little bit about that side.
So I remember my first time long jumping. I was in seventh grade. And crazy enough, the first meet of the year, I was at Virginia Beach Middle High School, first meet on my first ever jump. So I get my approach, I jump, and then I land, and I'm like, something off. So about 3 weeks later, so I did the long jump, and then I was 400. So I was killing the 400 all practice before the first meet. I run the 400 and I'm like, man, something's wrong. 3 weeks after that, I do the same thing. I jump, something's not feeling right. I do the 400. So my mom takes me to the doctor and I chipped a bone in my hip. My first ever long jump attempt. The craziest thing.
Hey. So
I couldn't compete in none of the meets. I never could run like, it felt crazy. We thought I had to have surgery, but the doctor said since I was so young, it would heal on its own. So fast forward to ninth grade, I'm long jumping, triple jumping. I get third in the district in the triple jump. I jump 44 feet, and this is with no form.
Yeah.
So I'm dunking in seventh grade on regulations. So I was always a big jumper, and Justin Hunter, who's my cousin, the same neighborhood, and went to Ocean Lakes and was a three-sport All-American, and he went to Tennessee, University of Tennessee, played a couple years in the league. He got first, and I got third behind him, man, and I just vividly remember my mom standing there on my third-place jump for the district, man, my freshman year of high school, man. I'm glad y'all took me back there, man.
Yeah. Then you finished first in the district in the long jump for 2012, your senior year.
Yeah, man. And what's crazy about that, I rarely would practice, bro. Like, because I was so caught up in, you know, football training and getting my body right and everything. Like, I rarely would practice my jumps. And I just went out there all off athleticism, bro.
Mm. Right.
Like,
wow. That's impressive.
Wow. I was just, bro.
You know, a baller, shot caller, always. Oh, that's all right. That's all right.
Yeah, man, because long jumping, you got to, like, kind of, you know, get your steps, put the tape down so you know when to hit it. bro, hit the mark. You know what I'm saying? And you probably not even hitting the board.
Bro, I never had a mark. If I jumped 25 times, I probably hit board 3 times. I always jumped on the board. And then triple jump was. So I had a bad habit of jumping so high. Bro, I got a picture. I was so high in the air. I'm like, goodness gracious, if I just like jump out, I could have been a national jumper. I was jumping 40, 45 feet with no second phase. And everybody knows in a triple jump, it's all about your second phase, stretching it out. So I was pop, pop, pop. Like, I was just out there just jumping, man.
Wow. Wow.
You a freak, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Hey, those are a freak problem. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? When you freakishly gifted, those kind of problems. Yeah, I wouldn't know what that means. So, yeah. But I can identify when I see it.
100, man. For sure.
No doubt. So then, as we look at your senior year, I mean, you absolutely went ham. 78 tackles, 16 sacks. But people may not even realize you also play quarterback.
Don't even do that.
Hold up. 1146 total yards, 20 touchdowns in the Wildcat offense, led the team in 41 receptions, 723 yards. I mean, he kind of was doing it on both.
That's what
sides.
I'm saying. That's not even fair.
I threw 3 touchdowns.
That ain't fair.
Oh, Lord.
Go ahead, Eli. Go ahead. Explain the three touchdowns to you through.
Coach Scott was like a father to me, man. Him and my cousin Walt, who is a member of Omega Psi Phi fraternity, he plays in Norfolk State and passed away the year that my mom and nephew had passed. Mm. And Coach Scott, man, he's always been – that guy that I went to and I could always talk to. And I remember, I'm like, Coach, like, because Justin Hunter ran the Wildcat, and we barely ran it when he was there because LaFonte Thurgood was our quarterback, and he was a dual threat. So Justin really didn't have to do it. So when LaFonte left, I'm like, Scott, just give me the ball, man. Like, just let me run it. And we started running it in game 4, and it just took off from then. Bro, it got so crazy. Like, I was calling my own quarterback sneaks. Like, our quarterback was on the go out short yardage. I'm running the quarterback sneak. I'm scoring on the goal line and then third and short, just running it, calling my own plays on fourth and short. I'm like, yo, we going to run this thing. And dudes was scared, man. Like, dudes didn't want to tackle me. I was so big and I was fast and strong, man. I'm like, hey, Coach, let's just ride this wave, man.
Yeah.
So much talent on the team. Right. I really – like, I literally never got off the field. Like, I played both sides every single snap. And I was talking to my cousin a few days ago. I'm like, yo, there's no way I could do that now.
Right.
Bro, when old heads used to tell me all the time, like, it's going to catch up with you one day. Mm. Like, the older you get, man, you just start – it just start wearing on you, man, you know? And I'm still young.
Yeah. You know? You're still young. Look, I put it to you this way. Old age is this. I went to play golf yesterday in 100-degree weather. I had to warm up for about 45 minutes before I could take my first swing.
Yeah,
that's old right there, partner. That's old.
That's major, man.
I'm back here giggling, right? I'm giggling because I'm in denial. I'm giggling at that.
You out there running 13 and 20 miles. Man, be quiet.
You running 9 miles like it's nothing. I'm done. I can sprint all day. But
See, that's one thing I can't do no more. I can't sprint all day, so now I got a job.
Hey, Hawk, I see you and Biscuit, man. I see y'all your times and the distances. And it just hurts my heart. I'm happy for y'all, but I miss that running, bro. It's killing me. I'm out there walking 6 or 7 miles, and I'm like, boy, I sure
miles is a mile,
running
bro.
Right now.
A mile is a mile. He just said, I can sprint all day. You see what that did to me? I was like, man, I give you about 4 110. That's it.
That's a wrap. It's a wrap. Okay, so then putting up crazy numbers, all type of accolades, number 5 defensive end and nationally, number 1 outside linebacking prospect nationally, first overall player in the state by Rivals, ESPNU top 150, Super Prep All-American, Super Prep Mid-Atlantic Defensive Player of the Year, accolade after accolade after accolade. All right, well, then it came down to colleges. Your top 3, what were they?
It was UVA, Florida, and Penn State.
And Florida was the top for you for a long time, correct?
So growing up, Percy Harvin is a hometown hero, man. Like, guys, the generation above me, it was Michael Vick. Mm-hmm. They loved Vick. So I had Vick, Curry, and all those guys. I had Percy, man. And, like, my first cousin, TJ Mitchell, was a quarterback on his team. And we would be walking in the lines, man, at Norfolk State regional games. Bro, he would be taking opening kickoffs to the crib. We standing in line, bro. The line is like, it's absurd. Like, it's crazy. Like, I've never seen anything like that. Lines are out of the gates, man. And he's scoring, doing all these things. Football, basketball, track. I mean, he was my Jordan on the football field. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, Mom, if I get that Florida offer, it's no doubt about it. I'm not taking any visits. I'm committing on the spot. And I remember, like it was yesterday, I don't remember the recruiting coordinator name, but when they came and gave me the offer, I was like, Coach, I'm ready to commit today. And he was like, nah, hold off, because I don't want you to go on a decision, you know, not really thinking about it. And I was like, okay. And from that day on, man, I didn't take my visit because obviously my mom had passed away. And when that happened, I'm like, man, there's no way I can leave home, dude. Like, you know what I'm saying? And then with all the stuff going on at Penn State, I won't go in there. Right. But Mike Lundy connected on a father-son level, man. And, you know, I looked at him and I thought he'd be the guy that could, you know, take my game to the next level, man, and help mature in that aspect of not having a father.
Right. Because I saw something where you said Coach London was a man's man, you know, and that impressed you mightily.
Yes, sir. And that's what I looked for, man. I remember talking to Joe Paterno on the phone, you know what I'm saying? But ultimately, man, I just felt that first and foremost, he was an African-American male. So being from where I'm from, it's rare to see Black men in power, you know, at the top level. You know, obviously he wasn't an NFL head coach, but he was a college head coach in the ACC at a university. Traditionally, you know, it's the odds, the numbers for Black men high. So
yeah,
I took that and I ran with it, man, and I don't regret it not one bit.
No doubt. So I mean,
I mean, cut you off, Kevin. You talk about the recruiting to Florida, and with the passing of your mom, can you talk about the role that your brother played in during recruiting? Because, you know, he essentially became that father figure, that stability in your life because of tragic events that took place. Can you talk about your brother, Walter, and the role he played?
So he was, you know, he was a pastor. You know, my mom had him when she was very young. A lot of people don't know, but he's old enough to be my father.
Mm.
His kids are my nephews, and they're older than me. So, you know, me and him had that father-son relationship early on, but he wasn't my dad. So it was kind of a, I wouldn't say a disconnect, but, you know, ultimately, if we ever got into arguments, I'm like, man, you're not my dad, blah, blah, blah. But he really taught me a lot, man, and seeing the way he raised his kids, and He helped mold me into the guy that I am today. But in the recruiting process, he really never told me where he wanted me to go. He always kind of said, hey, man, whatever you want to do, I'm behind you and everything. Take me to all my visits to UVA whenever I went up there to games and all those things. But like I said, man, he really didn't force me. You know, I see a lot of parents and a lot of guys, you know, letting their parents pick where they go. And I'm like, ultimately, man, you the one who got to spend those years there. You know, you the one who got to do your own, you got to do the school work and everything, and your family's not going to be there for you. So I just felt like going to UVA, you know, with the losses that I had, just near my family so they could drive up and see me play was the best decision for me, man.
Nice.
Yeah, man, but you know, it's when I think back and I talk a little bit about this, man, I think you and I connected on early, you know, just because the things that you had gone through and I saw so many similarities, man. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But first year, you hit the scene when you were ride on the yard. What were your thoughts?
So luckily, a lot of people don't know this, but I recruited a lot of guys to go there with me. Mm-hmm. So my cousin Devontae Walker, Anthony Cooper, Kyle Dawkins, Quanti Moore, Mario Nixon, Wilfred Wahee, like me and those guys, like, you know how LeBron, D. Wade, and Chris Bosh teamed up? Like, I really tried my hardest to get all the top-ranked guys in the state to stay home. Mm. So going into it, man, it was like I wasn't alone. You know, our first workout, I'm thinking like, man, thank God I got all these guys around me, man, because I tend to be shy when I meet new people. You know what I'm saying? I really don't, like, open up. So having all those guys with me at that time really helped me out, man, and kind of helped open me up, you know, and let guys see my personality, let the coaches see my personality, and we went from there, man.
Yeah, and the thing is like it was you coming here, the squad was coming off an 8-5 season, Chick-fil-A Bowl appearance. So then you coming in, you bringing your crew with you, the sky appeared to be the limit at that point. So you come in that first year. You play in all the games, one of the few true freshmen to be able to play that first year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you 7 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 36 tackles, pretty decent coming out the gate. But you finished 4-8. So how was that impacting you saying, okay, all right, I know I belong. I'm putting up numbers, but we're not putting up enough dubs for me.
Man, so coming from, you know, high school, we always have winning records, but we always underachieve. Like, we have the oldest rosters in the state of Virginia every year, and we never really achieved. So I'm saying these guys just went to the Chick-fil-A Bowl, man. So, and we got one of the best top recruiting classes in the country. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Myself, we're going to do numbers, man. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, a lot of the guys, a lot of the writers or what have you had us, you know, predicted to do pretty good. And then when we didn't, man, I'm like, man, the world is ending. You know, being a
right.
You know, you don't really, you think, you really kind of closed-minded on a lot of things. You see things one. So I'm saying, man, this is bull. I don't know why I came here, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, man, that was a little tough on me, man. And then I was going through a lot of stuff mentally freshman year, and you know, with the loss of my mom, you know, I sad all the time. I was in a state of depression. I was alone, by, you know, closed door, dark room, by myself. You know, I went through a lot, so all that kind of, you know, weighed on me once football season had ended. And, you know, when you get that break before you start winning workouts. So I was really down in the dumps. And that just added on to it, you know, not winning, you know, not really playing as much. But I didn't, you know what I'm saying? I really didn't. I was just living in the moment. I really didn't see, you know, what the future could hold the following year.
Right. And I think that's probably the time when me and you start connecting, right around that time.
Yes,
you know?
Sir.
And because I heard about you, heard, you know, about your mom, had a similar incident with losing my mom, you know, who was 47 when she passed, so at a very young age. And you and I just connected from that standpoint there, man. And for me, I always wanted to be an outlet for you, you know, and I just remember before games, you know, I would always come down, find you, We go down toward the end zone. I'd hug you, tell you I love you, and, you know, go out and do the damn thing, as dogs do, you know. And I cared about you more than just a football player, and I think you sensed that, you know, fairly quickly.
Yes, sir. I did, 100%. And you, like I say, man, being a black man of, you know, you played in the league. I could just relate to you, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you've been there, you know, where I was. Not only that, we connected because we both lost our mom at early mm-hmm. ages. Not only that, I say it again, you are a black influential male. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So
it was,
I'm like, man, I need a guy like this, man, an OG that can teach me game. Not only that, he was motivating the hell out of me, you know what I'm saying, to be the best at everything that I was doing. Not only, you know what I'm saying, playing football.
Yeah.
I really didn't apply myself, but you always talked about those things, man, and it always was here, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I really was thankful for that.
Yeah, bro. All brothers always. That's a fact. That is an absolute fact. All right, so year two. Change in the coaching staff. 2013, and they bring in John Tenuta as a defensive coordinator. You still put up numbers. Again, led the team with 15 tackles for loss, number 6 in the ACC. You led the team in sacks at 8.5. Number 5 on the team in tackles with 51. So you still putting up numbers. But the squad is 2-10. Tell me about that.
Bro, first of all, me and Tenuta won't really, like,
keep it 100, fella. We keep it 100. We already know. But we're going to tell them about it. We're going to tell people about it.
Like, really in like a love-hate relationship. He loved that I was making plays, but I hated his guts. Like, no matter what, I really didn't like
him. Right.
Because at the end of the day, he had so much talent. But, like, in walkthroughs, like, everybody was handcuffed. Like, everybody was handcuffed. Like, Trey Nicholson, David Dean, Brent Urban. I mean, bro, we had so much talent, but no one could really, like, break loose because he was so caught up in doing things his way. You see all these SEC teams, Bama, Florida, Mississippi State, LSU, they got talent. They let those boys play. Like, every big school in the country, they let their boys play. I know we want a top-notch school, but when you have that talent, those are another recruiting class coming in back-to-back years of ball. Like, he really didn't let guys be themselves, man. You know what I'm saying? I don't even need to get into it anymore, man, because the next year was even – oh, my God.
That's all right. We're going to keep rolling in.
Oh, we're going to get there.
We're going to keep needling in there to go. We want to get it out there so people know. Facts. All right? So here we go. 2014, started all 12 games. 14.5 tackles for loss, 3rd in the ACC, 7 sacks, number 6 in the ACC, 54 tackles, 1 fumble for loss, 1 fumble return for a touchdown, 1 interception, all ACC second team, and, you know, you're 5-7. Holla at him.
Man, he, like I said, man, oh my God. And I was hurt. A lot of people don't know this. But I was hurt more than half the year. I had a injured labrum.
Mm-hmm. And
I remember telling the training staff, and by the way, after the second game of the year, I knew I was leaving, Tony. Like, I knew I was out of there. So I was, you know, weighing options with my brother and everything. But I was so fed up, man, because it was another great recruiting class, and we just could not put things together, man. And, like, I didn't understand it. And once again, the guy being stuck in his ways, like, at this point, I just had 8.5 sacks, bro.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 130-pound defensive end, undersized, playing against all these big guys, BYU, Oregon. I mean, all these big schools, man. I'm like, and he was just like, he really, I just feel like he had a personal vendetta against me. I really don't think.
Right.
And he thought other guys, I won't disclose names, were better than me. And he would set those guys up and put those guys in positions to make plays. Mm. And he had, like, you know, doing other things. I don't know what that was, but I really couldn't stand it, man. So I'm like, hey, man, I'm playing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Going out here, and I'm playing for my future. And I just want to have the best take possibly that I could have. Even though I was hurt, a lot of people didn't know. I was taking the ibuprofen before the game, 800s, man, trying to really help myself match that pain because I was hurting, man, a lot of those games, man, hurting. And I never came out, so it was tough.
Right. Hawk, you were on the ground, man. So can you pour a little bit into that?
Look, man, I just – sometimes, you know, as a former player, you can tell the relationship piece. And it's a lot of things, like Eli said, like he want to say, and I know he's not going to say, and we're not going to say it because it's something that you don't want to beat a dead horse. Like the relationships weren't healthy, and it just shows that, like, a young man like Eli was being professional before he was playing professional sports, because mm-hmm. his way of understanding, like, I may not like you, but I still got a job I got to do. I understand right. my future. I understand I'm playing hurt. And, you know, people may take his comment the wrong way, in which he said, I knew I was gone after the second game. But you see, he's still trying to play. He's taking 800 milligram ibuprofen.
Yep.
Like, that's messing up your damn organs in the long run.
Liver hating it.
Yeah, but he's trying to make sure he played it. Cause if he plays to the best of his ability, it's helping the team. So no matter how selfish he's sounding, it's still going to help the team. You know what I'm saying? Like, he still wants to win, but – you know, that's the common thing with Tenuta, man. And we're going to have guys on in the future that play for him, and you're going to hear people echo his sentiments. Like,
yeah,
it just wasn't healthy.
We all heard it, Eli, you know. And then, you know, after that year, 2015, you're like, yo, I'm out. You know, after looking over your shoulder at a career of 36 and a half tackles for loss, number 10 all time in UVA history, 17 and a half career sacks, number 11 all time mm-hmm. in UVA history. And you're like, yo, I'm chucking a deuce because I can't do this anymore, you know? And I hated it from the standpoint of, I felt like I was happy that you was going to get your money, but I was just like, man, I wanted you to finish what you started. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It, you know, and it just, I felt like you were denied the opportunity to finish what you started. And that pissed me off. And, you know, I didn't have a favorable relationship with the dude either. I thought he was a first-class prick. Let's just call it what it is, you know. And I just, you know, and to know what he did to you and you my dude, you know. So it was just, bro, it pissed me off. And, you know, I had a lot of conversations with Chip West, former DB coach at UVA, now coaching at Syracuse. And, you know, he would kind of give me a little bit of the insight and just kind of what was going on and how Tenuta was trying to handle you. And, man, that pissed me off, bro, big time.
Yeah, man, it was tough. And I don't want to make it seem like I was selfish, you know what I'm saying, anyway.
Nah, nobody taking it that way, bro.
Nah, right, yeah. I don't think you were selfish, Eli, but yeah, I ain't going to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, you good. I just felt – because, I wasn't – it was a lot of guys that felt this way, you know what I'm saying, and – Man, I just – if I could go back, man, and do it all over again, I probably would have stayed, knowing what I know now. But I just – like I say, man, I saw an opportunity, man, and mm-hmm. I took it. I took it, man. And I'm not – I hate being regretful, man, but it was – that's a tough – that was a tough year, man.
Yeah.
Physically, mentally, everything. That was tough.
Yeah.
Because having to deal with it twice – once is cool, but having to deal with it twice, I'm like, okay, maybe things have changed.
Right.
And, you know, when you got certain guys, man, like, these your ballers, man. These your guys that you know you're going to get it out of. Like, you're going to get
right.
– they're going to put on. Like, it's these couple guys right here, these pieces, they're going to put on.
Yeah.
Some of these other guys need all that talk that you do.
We some of these guys, we grew up, man, a different way. We grew up different, man. We don't need all that. Like, so much stuff was just uncalled for, man. It's just, it was crazy, man. It was nuts.
Yeah, we feel you. So, man, I was getting ready to say, insert something right here, but I forgot it.
I
hated when
I was about to be petty. I was about to be petty and be like, damn, the Coach Tenuto have something against D lineman from the 757, but I ain't gonna say it.
Bro, I think you should be, I think you need to go ahead and go there with that though.
From Eli, then we all know about AB.
Yeah.
That, I mean, those two top flight number one guys from the area, and they, like, in a sense, Eli avoided the doghouse because it was there to set the trap to get him to go in there, but he saw it and he maneuvered and stayed out. But AB wasn't so lucky.
Right.
He got in the doghouse.
Yep. Got caught up in it, and everybody looking at him like, oh, he a five-star bust, not really knowing what the situation was there. And the crazy thing is, once you remove that cancer, so to speak, then you saw a young man flourish.
You seen that flower bloom.
You know what I'm saying? Hey, oh, this is what it was. Paul, can you imagine Eli in this system right now, in this defensive system? Oh, my God.
God, are you serious?
Man, I see those guys, man. I'm like, I did this in the league. They running stuff. I run in the NFL. I'm like, Snowden and all those guys. I'm like, man, the freedom. Oh,
yeah,
my
exactly. There you
God.
Go. The freedom. That's what Broncos and staff do. They play to what you do best. Whatever you do best, they're going to formulate a scheme and a package to display that. And we'll worry about the deficiencies as we go.
Later. We'll figure the rest of it out.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how NFL coaches talk.
Hmm. Speaking of the league, I don't want to jump ahead, but ladies and gentlemen, Eli Harrell, it was released to the public that he was going pro actually on my daggone birthday, December 10th. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So I feel special. This one playing, I don't know if Eli remember this. I think, I don't know if it's his last game, one of his last games, but no, it was his last game. I was at Popeyes, had just been built. I get a honk at the horn. Hey, big bro. I turn around, this Eli, he talking about, hey, man, you going to hear something soon. And that's all he said to me. And then, lo and behold, my birthday, dude, we got the same barber. Barber asked me, you talk to Eli, why Eli leaving? I'm talking to them like, look, man, I don't disclose family business, but why y'all complaining? Like,
right.
I'm with him.
Right. Back.
So shout out to you. Appreciate that, man. I'm going to remember that. You know what I'm saying? I'm late. Cause my
that's dope. That's dope.
Oh, man. I didn't even know that.
That's dope.
Wow.
All right. So in the draft, third round pick of the San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. How did you feel, man, when you got that call, bro?
Man, it was amazing, man. But it was amazing. But it was a little bittersweet. Obviously, I got caught up in, you know, the media and the projections and where my agent thought that I'd go. Instead of going in it, you know, preparing for the worst, at the end of the day, I was drafted. And when I look back, that was very selfish of me to be upset where I got picked. I was a 79th overall pick, like, in the NFL, living out my dream. Like, this is amazing. But in the moment, I literally sat. When I didn't get picked the second round, dude, I was hurt. But ultimately, to be drafted, man, like, there's so many guys who didn't get drafted and are multimillionaires. Like, dudes who are going to be Hall of Famers, dudes who are just at the top of the mountain in the football world. But, yeah, like I say, man, I look back on it. That was very selfish of me. But I when I got that call, man, it was a special moment, man, you know, reflecting on my life, everything I had been through up to that point, and all the work I put in finally paid off, man. It was beautiful, bro. It was beautiful.
And how was that first year, man? I mean, you played all 13 games. 13 tackles, one fumble recovery. How was it that first year?
It was tough, man. You know, obviously, I wasn't making the plays that I should have been making. Mm-hmm. I knew the defense, I knew the scheme, but I don't know, man. It was tough, man. It's hard to explain, man. I kind of got back, you know, in that dark place that I was in as a freshman, man. I don't know how I got there, but I did. Mental health really wasn't there. But I don't know, man. It was weird, man. It was weird.
I can relate. I can relate, though, Eli, because I remember going to when I got drafted by Tampa, the 93rd pick. And I had lost my mom a week before training camp was the start.
Wow.
You know, and so it was me going to a place where I didn't know anybody. Similar, you going to San Francisco, you didn't know anybody, you know, to interview for a job, basically, you know. And, bro, it was hard because I didn't know anybody. It was a whole lot of me in my dorm room with my rookie roommate, and it was being in the playbook, listening to sad ass songs, missing my mom, you know, bro. It was, bro, and it was a lot of anger for me, quite honestly. And, you know, I had a severed relationship with God because I was angry at him, feeling like he made a mistake. So while most people don't know what that is to go to that dark place and not really understanding it and you not understanding it yourself, I can relate more than you could possibly know, my man.
Yeah, man. And then, you know, social media was big at that time. So seeing people talk bad about me, this guy isn't it, why did we draft him? I'm letting all this outside noise affect the person I am, not knowing that, you know, that doesn't mean anything. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But, you know, I was young, man. And I was just going through it, bro. That was a tough time, man.
For sure. Hawk, you can relate.
For you going from, you know, basically rushing the passer to having to play linebacker and you know, drop and stuff, man.
It was tough because learning the schemes in college was so easy because I was always going forward, you know. Yeah. I played on one side of the ball in college, one side, played on the right side, never went on the left. So having to, you know, learn that, play on two different sides, learn how to drop, learn about coverage. 7-on-7 in itself was like a game every day. I'm playing against Colin Kaepernick, had 100 miles an hour fastball, with Anquan Boldin and Vernon Davis, Joe Staley and all these freaking superstars. I'm like, Jesus
Christ. Even Reggie Bush joined y'all, right? Was Reggie on the squad that year too?
Reggie Bush?
Yeah.
Reggie was on the squad.
Yeah.
Reggie hit a lick too. Reggie tore his knee at the Edward Jones Dome in St. Louis. He tore his knee because they had some bad turf and then they had cement off to the side. Reggie got some bread. Reggie hit a lick.
Wow.
As he should.
Hey, how was it for you? I know he was before your time, but he came from UVA. How was your relationship with Ahmad Brooks? Ahmad is an introvert, you know.
Oh my God.
Was he talkative?
Not really. Crazy. I just talked to him 2 days ago. He lives here too. He was a great role model for me on the football field, man. Cause he was so freakish athletic. Yeah. Like the dude didn't have to lift. He didn't have to like. He was just so fast, man. He's an OG.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, I remember watching highlights of you when I played at UVA. Blah blah blah. And being there with him was fun, man. And
how he respond though? Tell the truth. How he respond when you said that?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's what's up, bro.
Like change the subject type stuff.
He really didn't open up to me. You know, it took time. And then I gained his trust, and now me and him very tight. We very tight.
That's dope. Salute to Ahmad Brooks, man.
Yes, sir.
That's dope. That's dope. All right, so then year two, 2016, 37 tackles, 3 sacks, 1 fumble recovery, 1 forced fumble. Okay, so the numbers starting to increase a little bit. What were your thoughts in year two?
I was a little bit more confident. You know, I found out what I was good at. You know, the knock on me was playing the run when I got drafted. And I remember sitting down with my linebacker coach, Jason Tarver. And I'm like, man, if I'm not going to be in the game on third downs, because we had Alden Smith, Aaron Lynch, who had, I think, 6 sacks his rookie season, then Ahmad. And then my second year, Ahmad and Aaron had started, and I was the third guy. And they were the pass rushers. I'm like, if I'm not going to be in on third down, I'm going to establish myself doing something. So my second year, I was known for getting my face bloody in a run. I was known for busting dudes up in a run. Like, that was my role from that moment on. You know, obviously, I got drafted to be a pass rusher, but in the league, man, they put you where they want you. And
you got to adapt.
And you just, like I said, you got to be a chameleon, man. You got to know how to adapt. And so I embraced that role, man. And my mental health was very much better. Me and my lady's relationship grew. You know, I got I was maturing so fast, man. And life was slowing down a little bit from, you know, going from being in college to going to get drafted to playing my rookie year. Finally had an off season, got to relax a little bit, and things slowed up.
Cool. All right. So then year three, 2017.
Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
He said it slowed up, but is it suck? I don't know. No, let's talk about the football first, because I'm going to come back to 2016, because something important took place. A lot of people don't know who was by this individual, like he was by this individual side. You know what happened in 2016, right? Was that, yeah, it was 2016 when Cap took his knee. A lot of people don't know.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that.
We're going to come back to that.
All good. So 2017. 34 tackles, 2 sacks. This year three for you. Thoughts?
So it was a scheme change. My first 2 years, we ran a 3-4. And, dude, when I say – and for a lot of people don't realize, year one, I had Jim Tomsula, head coach, and I had Eric Mangini's defense coordinator. Year two, I had Chip Kelly with Jim O'Neill. Year three, I had Kyle Shanahan with Robert Saleh, who are still in San Fran now. They lost the Super Bowl. I was tight about that. But 3 years, 3 head coaches, 3 schemes. Wow. My head is spinning at this point.
Yeah.
I literally mastered the playbook my first 2 years. I could tell you everybody's job with my eyes closed. And I get to year three, and they come and tell me, you're an on-the-ball Sam linebacker now. I'm like, okay. Not knowing that it was 100% different than anything else I've done. I'm covering literally every play. I probably get 1 zone blitz in every 15 plays because you got to keep the offense honest.
Yeah.
You got to run. You got to do your whatever your statistics show, you gotta keep them honest and you gotta stay on board so you can set up your exotics, blah, 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 blah. We don't need to get in all that. But, dude, like, I literally was dropping every single play. And the only time I played third downs is if they was in 12 personnel, 21, 22, 13. Like, I wasn't in on any nickel. And at this point, I'm full-fledged an edge setter. Like, I'm manhandling the top run blocking tight end. I mean, I'm killing. I'm stuffing everybody. But my job, I'm doing the stuff that no one talks about in the paper.
You like the nose guard in the 3-4.
Right. Credit.
Yep.
You keeping alignment off your linebacker
mm-hmm.
in the 3 nose guard. A lot of people For the people that don't know what a nose guard and 3-4, your job is to hold two guys every single play.
Get beat up.
To let other guys make plays.
Yeah.
So I'm literally, cuff, no one is running the ball on the side I'm on. I'm not being arrogant. I'm not being cocky. I'm just giving you facts. Nobody. I'm literally fullbacks coming to me. My nickname, my linebacker coach nicknamed me Headache. Because I legit was knocking dudes out, fullbacks, lead blocking. No, you're not getting – the ball's not getting outside of me. So, at this point, I fully embraced this role. Like, right. Everybody on the team knows, if you go to block Eli, you better be ready because he's going to bust you in your face. Yeah, everybody knew. Joe Staley, all the tight ends, the head coaches, every meeting, they're talking about it. So – And at this point, we're super rebuild mode. We just fired the GM. We got a new GM, new head coach. Everybody in the front office is new besides the owner.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, they're hyping me up, saying I'm part of the rebuild. I have my role. So after the third season's over, going into my contract year, I'm fully confident. I'm ready to work. And then it was after the first preseason game, after the third preseason game against Houston, I balled out. They're trying to run the ball my way. I'm choking dudes out. They're not getting over there. So they take me out. My day's over. And I remember, because we was with Houston for like 4 days, you know, you do the joint practices.
Right.
And it was hot all hell as hell. It was 80, and we were practicing at 8 o'clock. It was like 110 degrees. I've never been that hot in my life.
Wow.
So we get back to San Jose and we have a practice and dude, everything is going good. They're hyping me up. You're part of our future. You're our starting Sam linebacker. Because in OTAs and mini camp and a couple weeks of training camp, I was a little gimpy. I'm 26. I got arthritis in my knees. So I always have a certain point of time, my knees act up on me and I have to get extra treatments and everything. So the coaches,
old ass young man.
my position coach knew, but I really didn't want everybody to know.
Yeah.
So he comes in after one day and addresses the whole linebacker room. Is like, Eli, a lot of the coach asking questions. They saying, why aren't you playing like you normally play? And he's like, I know what's going on, but I just go out there and show them. He's basically like, they talking shit about you, go show them. So yeah, I get in the Houston game. Like I said, I'm killing dudes, like manhandling dudes. So I'm like, he's like, all right, they seen it, blah, blah, blah. So we practice. I think it was a Thursday or Friday practice. Everybody's talking and hyping me up. I made a couple plays in practice. John Lynch dapping me up. Kyle Shanahan talking about me in meetings. Blah, blah, blah. Me and my wife had just moved. She's 8 months pregnant. We're unpacking the house. I get a call. Blah, 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 blah. I see it's a Denver, Colorado number. I don't answer numbers that I don't have on my phone, so I hang up.
Right.
I get a voicemail. I listen to the voicemail. It's John Lynch. Hey, Eli. I tried to catch you before you left. Call me back. I call him back. He says, what's up, man? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, nothing. Unpacking my house. We just moved. I just want to inform you that we're going to go a different direction. After he said that, I didn't hear anything else he said. I got traded to Detroit. I thought my life was over. I felt like somebody had spit in my face. Like I was hurt. More hurt than hurt can get. I just thought my life came crashing down. And man, that was a tough day, man. That was a tough day for me.
That's the ugly side of the business they don't tell you about.
They don't tell you about that. They don't tell you about
finish
that.
Finish unpacking, man. Or did you say, man, pack this back? Hey, movers, wait a minute.
We weren't even finished. Like, we weren't nowhere near finished unpacking out. We slept on the floor on our mattress that night in the new house, the night before I got traded. We had stayed in the house one night. And
we literally had to leave because my wife, if it would have been like 2 weeks later, she wouldn't even have been to have the baby in Detroit. Mm-hmm. So we flew, left all our stuff in his house, in that house, had to hire movers to pack it up and ship it to Detroit.
Like from San Francisco.
Ooh. From San Francisco. Like all my the cars, everything had to get shipped. It, bro, that was like a whirlwind. Crazy. And then my agent's talking to me like, it's not a guarantee you're going to make the team, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what the hell? What you mean it's not a guarantee? This is the last week of the preseason. Like, so I had to play in the fourth preseason game and basically solidify myself in Detroit. And I guess I did. And I made the team.
You made the team in 2 days, basically.
Right. Yeah. That was a whirlwind. Yeah.
Well, you know, look, you played in played in 13 games, 10 tackles, 4 sacks. All right. So that season winds down. Are you like, okay, I'm gonna stay here. I'm gonna do something else. What were your thoughts after the season?
So I'm gonna say this in much not giving away things as possible, because I'm still in this business. So, Ziggy Ansah goes down. Everybody knows Ziggy Ansah. He was the defensive man for Detroit. He plays for Seattle at the time. He goes down in the first game, and I have to finish the first game out. The Jets beat these dog breaks off of us. It was ridiculous. Like, they destroyed us. So, going into every week, I was in the pass rush game plan. And the linebacker in front of me, Devon Kennard, he was the every down guy and he was the left end. He pass rushed on the left side. So he was never coming off the field. They had just paid him. And Ezekiel Ansah had got hurt. So every week going in the game plan, I was in the pass rush game plan as a starter. And I never really had got my chance until we played San Fran. Mm-hmm. So we go back to the Bay 3 weeks after I get traded, right? I'm off. My emotions are, bro, I'm literally like an 8-month-old pregnant woman. I'm happy. I'm sad. I'm hurt. I'm angry as hell. Ooh. All these emotions, right? So I played the third game or fourth game of the year. Before then, I had like 3 snaps, 2 snaps, 4 snaps. Like, I barely played, and I literally almost played the entire game. Hmm. And on special teams, playing everything. I remember San Fran had to punt. I think it was the opening punt of the game. And throughout the league, throughout my first 3 years, I was the guy, I loved rushing the punts, and I would always hold up the wings. Hmm. And I made a name for myself in the league by doing that because guys would never get on down the field. Because it would always be DBs and running backs playing wings, so I would hold them up. And Kyle Juszczyk, he's the best fullback in pro ball. He's been to the Pro Bowl like 6 straight years. Right. Went to Harvard, got a degree from Harvard. He's paid. He's the highest paid fullback ever. And it was me on him, and I was rushing the punt, but I had to hold him up. Dude, he didn't get off. It took him 7 seconds to get off the line of scrimmage. And we ran the punt back and we scored, but somebody was holding. So, I mean,
you get the holding call?
Huh?
Was it on you?
Me. No, it was not me. I had teach tape on that rep. But, like, I was so mad. And the 49ers in the red zone about to score was, like, 3rd and 7. Hmm. Me and Joe Staley, one-on-one. I pass rushed against this guy every down of my career up until this point in practice. Hmm. I beat him with an inside move. Lakin Tomlinson, the left guard, tries to help. I break through, sack Jimmy Garoppolo. My first sack in Levi Stadium ever. All the sacks I got was always on the road.
Yeah.
Bro, like, that was the greatest moment of my life up until that point.
I remember seeing it. I remember seeing it play.
Like, and I looked at the sideline like I was talking.
Talk to me nice.
Oh, my God. And long story short, we supposed to win the game. We lost on the last couple seconds of the game. And, like, I was, man, like, everybody came after the game. We jersey swapped. I was talking to everybody. Mm. Emotions all over the place. I'm crying. Other guys crying. Like, I had came into the fold with these guys. Like, went to war with these guys every day, man. Yeah. Like, we watched each other grow up.
Right.
And, man, that was a tough moment, man. And then after that, we play Brady Monday night.
Yeah, I'm about to say, yeah. Just next week.
We play Brady Monday night. Babe, Zuri was born at this point. Yeah. My daughter was born at this point. So my wife and them couldn't even come to the game. Mm. So I'm there by myself, and I'm playing against Trent Brown, who we got drafted together. Last year, he was the highest paid offensive lineman in history. So I practiced against this guy for 2 years before they had traded him to New England.
Mm-hmm.
And we had talked to each other before the game. And people may not know, but Trent Brown is a large human. Dude is like 6'8", was like 375, 380
yeah.
pounds.
Yeah. He so half he's a load. He half a planet.
He's a load. So going into the week, I'm in a pass rush plan again. And it was a third and super long. And we're rushing the pass. We rushed three. So you rarely don't get sacks rushing three.
No.
We just trying to get off the field. So Brady's scrambling around. He's dancing. He's rolling. He's moving. It's like 12 seconds. And my eyes light up like a damn Christmas tree. The sack just fell in my lap. I sacked Tom Brady. I'm all over the place. My heart beating so fast. I'm smiling from ear to ear. I don't care how I got the sack. I sacked Tom Brady. I go to the sideline. I'm hyped. I'm like, man, I can't wait to tell my boys I sacked the GOAT. Blah, blah, blah. And we're winning. Like, we are beating these dudes. Like, they had like 150 total yards offense that game. And little do people know, but Matt Patricia was the defensive coordinator with Belichick in New England for years and years and years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he knew him like the back of his hand. One of the only games we won that year, too, by the way. But anyway, it's another third down. Me and Trent Brown one-on-one. I rush up the field, spin inside, beat him clean.
Who hit him with the Freeney?
Oh, man. After I did that move, I seen Brady just standing there. He just folded. I got another sack. At this point, I'm like, I cannot be stopped. I got sacked Brady twice. And what makes it even better, I leapfrogged him.
Whoa.
I leapfrogged him, and they got a picture of it.
Ooh.
Dude, now I'm on an all-time high. My daughter just was born. My wife wasn't here. At this point, I can't wait to get home and tell her.
Wait.
And we won. Like, dude.
That's dope.
That was the craziest moment of my career so far.
Hey, Eli, you made me really appreciate how Dave Chappelle felt when Charlie Murphy was telling his Rick his print story. Because just your face seemed like that's how Charlie Murphy said he was when he met Prince. When you spun around and saw Brady just right there.
He was just there. Like, nothing else in the world mattered at that point. Like, all I seen was him.
Right.
Like,
a glow? Was it a glow or anything?
I don't even remember, man. All I remember is just seeing that 12 facing me. And he's facing that way.
Jimmy G and then Tom Brady. And they got the same agent. You need to get their agent.
Right.
That's funny, man. But
that's what's up.
So the week my daughter was born, my wife was in labor for like 4 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I remember texting the head guy, like, hey, my wife's in labor. He's like, cool. Just come in when you can. And we thought she was gonna have a baby on that Monday. She didn't. And I went in, they sent us home. I went in, we did our little workout the day after the game. Then we had our mandatory day off on Tuesday. And Wednesday comes around, and Tuesday night, she felt like she was going to labor again. So I text him. He said the same thing. I'm like, I'll come in whenever I get the chance. And fast forward to Friday, I didn't practice all week. We're playing Green Bay. This is a rivalry game at home. And my daughter's born 8 a.m. that Friday morning. And at this point, everybody knows I can't play. The head guy let me know it's okay, blah, blah. Just stay home for the game, and we'll see you next week. He sends my daughter a book and a teddy bear. Mm. And after that, when I get back, things are weird, bro. Things are weird. Like, mind you, the guy let me know, man, like, when you get back, you know, we get you back in, blah, blah, blah. Just take time. Take as much time as you need. I get back, man, and things are weird, bro. Like, I'm not in a game plan for special teams. I'm not in a game plan for defense. Bro, I went to the Carolina game. We played Carolina at home. I dressed. Mm-hmm. I literally didn't touch the turf. Zero plays. I didn't get in on special teams. I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So, me and Darius Slay was real tight. And he let me know, because he was on the leadership council. And long story short, the guy was like, I mean, what did I think was going to happen? My spot was just going to be there after I missed a whole week. And I'm like, man, I was told something different. The guy told me take as much time as I needed. And when I get back, things aren't right. You know what I'm saying? So I went like five straight weeks. I wasn't even playing, bro. Like, I didn't get any action. So we playing against the Rams, and Devon Kennard goes down. I go in for like seven plays, sack Jared Goff. The first sack on Rob Havenstein the whole year. It's like week nine at this point. This year the Rams went to Super Bowl, by the way.
Yeah.
I sacked Jared Goff. And at this point, I'm like, oh man, like what can I compare this to? I'm like Ice Cube when he left NWA.
Ooh.
I'm like on some no Vaseline type. When I say I'm out there for me, I'm right. Legit out there for me. I'm talking cash, bro. Like, I'm getting in for four plays. I come in and make a play, and I'm not getting no respect. Like, bro, like, I'm all, like, oh, my God, my head is everywhere. So from that moment on, I'm just full rebellious, bro, like, doing me in the weight room by myself. It's like, I'm just there at this point.
Right.
I'm just there for you, bro. Like, I'm just trying to make sure I come home to my family every day.
Yeah.
Right.
And long story short, they offered me a free agency. I didn't take it. And then I went to Buffalo. And yeah.
Yeah.
That was year four, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So four years in. Yeah, you're a vested veteran, but your story doesn't end there. So we look forward to seeing you out on that gridiron again. I want to move into a little bit about the Colin Kaepernick piece and when you decided to take a knee alongside him and Eric Reed. What was your mindset and thought process in doing that?
So I remember seeing Cap do it, and he was sitting down at first. I think we was playing against the Chargers in the preseason. Nobody talked about it.
Yeah, talked about. Yeah, I'm glad that you said that either, because I was going to ask you to reflect on the first time you saw him not stand, and you already talked about it.
So it was the talk of the town. After the game, everybody, every reporter and their mama was at his locker. Mm-hmm. Talking about it. And I remember Coach Chip Kelly had a mass text sent out that night, and we had a players only meeting the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked to us about why he did it and systemic oppression and police brutality and basically being a voice for the voiceless people. You know what I'm saying? And everybody was like, oh, okay. But a lot of the players didn't agree with it, even though he said why.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, I talked to my team, my people, and I decided I'm going to take a knee. So we opened up the season. I forgot who we played, and he took the knee. Crowd booing. Everybody's going crazy. And, bro, like, the world is against him at this point. And I'm just sitting back thinking, like, dang, man, this dude really, like, cared. He's, like, legit risking his life for his people, man. And and I forgot what game. I don't remember who we was playing, man. So before the game, me, Antoine Bethea, 757 legend. Yep. Rashard Mathis, and a couple more guys decided we were going to put our fist up for the anthem. So when we put our fist up for the anthem, every reporter was at our locker after the game. And I voiced my opinion on the situation. And I told everybody, hey, man, I'm with Cap all the way. You know, I don't feel that it's right. You know, at this point, Trayvon Martin had already happened. Mm-hmm. And I think Eric Garner had happened. Mm-hmm. And we were fed up, man. And we just felt like that things weren't right. These guys weren't seeking justice. Their families just supposed to just be without their son forever at this point. And nothing's going to happen to the guys who did it to him. So I'm thinking to myself, like, man, bump it. I don't remember what – it was a former quarterback. Trent Dilfer had said something crazy. And that just blew me over the top about Cap. Mm-hmm. He said something. How's this guy gonna something about the locker room? And I shot a tweet. I'm like, bro, you don't know. You don't, like, me and him were going back and forth. I'm like, bro, you don't know what the hell you talking about. Like, you're not in our locker room. You don't know what's going on. So I went up to Cap and E. Reed. I'm like, man, I'm dealing with y'all, man. I'm fed up. I'm sick and tired of people feeling like they can say whatever they want to say when they don't even know what's going on. So I start taking a knee. Bro, my player mailbox, I'm getting letters from kids. I'm getting letters from moms. I'm getting letters from – I'm getting Facebook messages from my white friends' parents. I'm getting – hey, dude, I was called the N-word more times. I could have started my own world. 365 days, I could have had my own calendar. For the amount of times I was called out my name, man, like, it was sick. It was mortifying. It was just, I couldn't believe how much hate there was in the world. And I'll never forget when we went to Buffalo. We played at Buffalo.
Yeah.
In like October or November, when we took that knee, bro. Oh my God! The entire crowd booed. You couldn't even hear the national anthem playing. We was called out of our name so many times that day. It was ridiculous. I can't even, like, it's unfathomable thinking about it, bro. Like, I'm like, how is it so much hate in this world? Like, this is ridiculous, man. Like, from 1868 to 2016 at this point, from Martin Luther King to Medgar Evers, the guy I'm named after, to Malcolm X, to Angela Davis, to Huey Newton, to Bobby Seale, to Fred Hampton, to all these, I mean, people that, if it wasn't for them, we would still have segregation, dude. Like, for us to be here at this moment, not now, but I'm talking about 2016.
Yeah.
For us to be in that moment, like, I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it, man. It hurt so bad seeing that we haven't grown as a nation, you know what I'm saying, from so much hate and bigotry, man. It was just unfathomable to me. I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, dude, I was so proud when I first saw you kneel, dude. I can't. You know, there's been about 2 to 3 times in your lifetime and our relationship that I have been extremely proud. I remember, as I said earlier, hugging you in the end zone in Charlottesville, and we both telling each other that we love each other. Then watching you kneel beside Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed. And then when I came to Detroit and you allowed me to hold Zuri for the first time, because that's the first time I saw you as a father, and I couldn't have been more proud of you, dude. And so you continue to evolve as a man, father, and human being, and you do us righteous. You do us righteous, man. And I can't say enough superlatives about you, you know, because I know that you're going to continue to get better and better and better and better, because you are mentally locked in. You know, you understand the game of professional sports. You understand what it means to be a father. And you understand what it means to be a good brother and to leave a legacy for your folks. And so, you know, wear your name proudly, because it has a major history behind it in Medgar. You know, and for the longest, I didn't know that was your first name.
A lot of people don't.
Yeah.
I did.
So I went by it up until fifth grade. So first day of sixth grade, teacher saying, Medgar Harold, every class, teacher saying it. I'm like, just call me Eli. And I went through all middle school. My mom called me Eli. My whole family called me Eli until I was in trouble. But, yeah, man, nobody knows that's my name.
That's what's up.
Yeah, dude.
And no one knows who he is. I'm like,
you just dropped the dude.
Research, man.
Yeah, you just dropped the dude. I wanted to follow up, because a lot of times you gave us that insight, just the threatening letters and the disrespectful messages. You see so many people in the media, in the big time media, just have their opinions about Colin and the team and what it did and why he did this. Can you share with us, like, the healthy discussions or any discussions that took place within the locker room? Like, did you guys find yourself having to have meetings to make sure everybody was on the same accord? So, you know, at least everybody in your locker room understood that you guys weren't disrespecting the flag as the narrative was being painted for you guys that took a knee.
So that year he started taking a knee, we had that one meeting after the Chargers preseason game. And after that game, I could see that it divided the locker room a little bit, mm-hmm. because it was some white guys who weren't against it. It was some white guys who were against it. It was some black guys who were against it. And then vice versa.
Yeah.
So ultimately, everybody was vibing with each other and everything. But I feel like it really did, like, put a little bad taste in the air, a little bad smell in the air. But no one really came out and said it. Because we had front office people who didn't agree with it. We had training staff, we had player engagement people. I mean, we had everybody, like a lot of people that just didn't care for it. And no one really, like, sat back and listened to why. Like, till this day, people keep saying that it's about the flag. It had nothing to do with the American flag. Colin had veterans in his family. I had two uncles in Vietnam, by the way. Mm-hmm. I have an older cousin, my first cousin, just retired from the Army a couple years ago. She was a one rank under being a general, like, who gave me her blessing. Like, people don't understand, and folk take things and manipulate it to how they want to see it. So then when they do that, they make you out to be something that you're not. And this happens in everything. This happens in everything that people want to do. Folk take things and manipulate it how they want it to be seen by another one's eye. Like, it's just unfathomable to me that we did this 4 years ago and people are still saying it's about the flag. Like, how ignorant can you be? And you say you're so educated and aware of a situation. Yeah. And I just don't – people are just – moronic, man.
Yeah,
it makes no sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. It's not about the flag. I'll say it again. It was never about the flag, bro. It was never about the flag.
We just it, and it, it and we honestly thought it was a sign of respect taking the knee.
Hey,
and if you seen me in all my pictures, I said a prayer.
Right.
I said a prayer, and the pictures of me with my eyes open is probably when I finished it. But I always said a prayer during the anthem to ask God for unity and to help bring these close-minded people, these folk together, man. It's just, I just, to this day, I just do not understand how we haven't got anywhere as a nation. And yeah, people say that we got whites and blacks together. My wife's white, by the way. But there's still a divide in our country.
Right.
Like, if you don't see and believe that, then, hey, my friend, you are part of the problem. I'm sorry to be blunt as blunt can be, but that's just the truth. For all the folk out there listening to the podcast, if you have a problem with it, I'm sorry, but you're a part of the problem. That's just
right.
We just have to stop being so nice and letting people just manipulate things and take it the way they want to take it. We got to stop. We got to stop. Time out for all that, man. It's either you're on the side of right or you're on the side of wrong. When people say, what side are you on? When I say, what side are you on? It's not about what's black versus white. It's about what's right and what's wrong. At the end of the day, you either stand in what's right or you're standing what's wrong. So
that is real.
And the people that listen to this podcast know we're dealing facts. And they got, if they looking at the video version, his eyes are closed. Right there. I got a photo right here. Dressed in all black with his Batman face mask. His eyes closed. So he not lying.
So I just felt that that was – and Colin, he thought that that would be a sign of respect. And the guy who told him to do it, the guy who told him to take the knee was a veteran. I mean, a white guy. And people want to take it and man – I mean, it's just, bro, I just don't understand it, man. I don't like getting into politics, man, but, bro, it's insane.
Hey, it is what it is. And to your point, it is about using the voice and using the platform that you have. You know, those that are not saying anything, you know, and can allow it to happen, they are complicit. And they are just as big of a problem as the issue within itself. And
white
and
people, racism, the whites, the blacks, the Hispanics. I mean, anybody who's against, who's for what we are trying to speak out on, then you're wrong. You're a part of the problem. White, black, anybody. This is not a white versus black thing.
The one thing that bugs me, the one response that I think is the most ignorant response to the awareness, and when they talk about Black Lives Matter, is the black on black crime rebuttal. I think that's like the most ignorant and lazy rebuttal you can have.
Right.
Because there's no such thing as that. Like that's a neighbor issue.
Yeah. No, it really is, and it's so much deeper than that. And that's a cop out.
Yeah.
Anytime they try to come at you with that, it's a cop out.
You're talking about something and someone else tries to flip that and turn it into an entire different conversation, that's them shying away and not wanting to talk about the issue at hand, what we're talking about. Of course, there's black-on-black crime. We know there's black-on-black crime.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. We're talking about Ricky Smiley, your frat brother. Your frat brother, Ricky Smiley. I follow Ricky Smiley. I'm a big Ricky Smiley fan. He touched on it. And he told people, hey, y'all can cancel me. Y'all can say what y'all want. But it's the same thing, man. Folk don't want to talk about that issue, man, because they get uncomfortable. They get all tight, and they don't want to – they just get so uncomfortable talking about it. Mm-hmm. I can talk about anything with anybody. I don't care. Because I know what's right and I know what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I stand with whites, blacks, Chinese, anybody who is for what's right. I am on your side.
Facts.
And that's all I care about.
Yeah, and it's real, man. You know, and I hate to get into calling folks racist, but it is what it is, man. I think Dr. Ibram X his definition of it is probably best when he said, one who is supporting racist policy through their actions or inaction or expressing a racist idea. That's a racist. That's a racist.
I just favored a tweet today that said that.
Yeah, if you fit into that category, then that's who you are. Own it.
You're part of the problem.
Yeah, own it. For real. So, well, all right, fam, we want to pull in Drew Cassidy for a new segment that we pushing out. We want to bring Drew in for whose fan is this? We can see what it do, and a question he may have for you or us. So we would like to welcome Drew Cassidy into the mix.
Drew, bet. Let's go. Let's do it.
I got a cool background, so T-Dub, if you could throw it on, that'd be great. First off, man, thanks for having me, guys. This is such a cool opportunity to be with these two dudes, especially since I've gotten to know them a little bit, reading T-Cub's book. And I think what T-Cub was kind of getting to earlier, Eli, is he was going to give you a I Am Underdog University degree, because there's a common theme, man, when I'm listening to you two guys talk to Eli, you know, and it's cool here, and just a straight discussion. It's not an interview. And that's, dude, you have overcome so much. Like, think about the multiple defensive coordinators at UVA, multiple head coaches at San Francisco. There you go. There's a little look in my background. Got a little leprechaun. Might scare Tony from that 1989 game back in the day, but yeah, man. I just want to tie that together for you guys, man, and Eli, and bring that back to you just in case you weren't realizing, man, you've overcome a lot of different things. Like, and that's something to like really hang your hat on. But I gotta get it a little lighthearted, but you know, the problem is the people want to make this a political issue. It's a human issue. You know, I know me and my family, we're having tougher discussions the last few months because of some of this stuff.
Thank you.
Anyway, I don't want to get any more into that, because I'm here to be the UVA fan and to bring it back to that. I know we went over some seasons and stuff. So first off, Eli, shout out to you, because there's nothing cooler, in my opinion, I'm a college football nut, than a guy in the front seven wearing a single digit number. Like, and listen, man, to these look. Two dudes laughing, because there's little dudes wearing single digit numbers at some point at UVA.
I told Mike London, I say, coach, seven growing up was my mom's favorite number. I wore it in Little League. The only reason I didn't wear it in high school is the best player on the team always had number one. So coach wanted me to wear one. So I'm like, okay. So I told Mike, I told one of my family friends, Lily, I said, Lily, hit up London and let him know, man, I got to have seven if I'm coming. And he let me know that I could have seven. And man, that was my mom's favorite number. So that's a big thing that's near and dear to me, man, being able to wear that number. And I thank Mike London for allowing me to wear that on the D-line.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's good stuff, man. That's good stuff, man. And what Drew, what you're talking about is, man, we all are underdogs. We all have overcome things in our lives to get us to where we are now. And so, you know, I know the three individuals that play sports are on this call, and I'm sure you're an underdog as well, because you've overcome something to get you to the point where you are. And so there's such catharsis in us sharing our stories. And that's why underdog is so important to me, because, you know, I live it, I breathe it. It runs through my veins. It's who I am. And I identify folks that I know have been through some things and come out on the other side, when, you know, the alternative is to just sulk and have a woe is me attitude. But the life of an underdog is not that way. It's all right, I'm going to overcome this. No matter what I have had to endure, I will persevere through it and be the better version of myself on the other side. So thank you very much for chiming in. We appreciate you being the first one on Whose Fan Is This.
Why is he the first one?
He's the first one because he came up with this whole, he presented the idea. He listened to me on a podcast and he said, hey, T-Cub, you should connect with the guys at the Locker Room Access. And T-Dub was like, hey, let's talk. And it kind of rolled from there and boom. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Drew the man, man.
Yeah, appreciate you, Drew. Thank you.
Great idea,
for coming in, man. Yeah. Look forward to having you back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would love to go over some more games and stuff with you guys, for sure.
Absolutely. Oh, nice. Look at him.
We could definitely do that. We could definitely. Yeah, we got to bring
him. Oh, man.
May have it on one segment with just Drew like coming back with games for us.
I like the sound of that. Hold on. Let me get – I got to get in. I got Eli for just a second, man. I got to get into this because – and I know this maybe not – it's not the most fun thing to talk about in your time at UVA, but talk to me a little bit about – because you're in the middle – all UVA fans hate the streak. They hate hearing about the streak, right? And you're involved in two pretty big games at Lane Stadium in 2012, 2014. Like, what's your mindset and what do you think, like, the difference is between you guys' mindset and maybe the other team's mindset? And what was the difference? Like, you know, I think both those games were, like, you know, heartbreaking as a fan. I'm sure it was the same thing for you. I mean, you mentioned that earlier when you're talking about your decision to kind of move on to the next level because you were kind of fed up with some things. So talk to me a little bit about, like, the Virginia Tech game and that kind of mentality. And, like, was your prep different? Like, did you guys – do you feel like you got nervous? Or I'm trying to – I think fans would like to really hear that side of things.
So first of all, I hated Tech senior year. So Frank Beamer and Kurt Newsom, the recruiting coordinator, I got the offer from Tech as a sophomore. And I went to countless games, went to countless visits there and enjoyed my time. But I remember senior year, Kurt Newsom.
Edit that out. We're gonna edit that enjoy part out though.
Kurt Newsom and Frank Beamer sat in my coach's office, and they had on about 15 rings.
Mm.
And they were talking to me. We were talking about my mom and everything, and Kurt Newsom got his legs crossed with his hands showing all his rings, and Frank Beamer over there with his big chin sitting over there, and they just flashing all them rings. And they not once, like, talked to me about me. Like, all they cared about is, we want you to come here. You're going to win rings. You're going to do this. At that point, I didn't need a friend. I didn't need nobody who was going to pump me up and prime me. I needed somebody who was going to connect with me. So right then and there, I just hated Tech. So I went to UVA, and I didn't understand the rivalry until hate week. So, but no, guys didn't get nervous, man. Like, we ballers, man. You know what I'm saying? This is our war. Like, yeah, you have nerves before the game when you in between them lines, bro. Nothing else matters. Hmm. Like, that's just me. Nothing else matters to me when I'm in between them lines. I want to make it home to my family. It's the only thing I care about. But I'm trying to impose my will for 60 minutes on the guy across from me, and that's how I was first year, second year, and third year. And we had close games each year, man, and we never just could pull it out. I don't know what it was, but we would always prepare like that was our national championship when we was playing against Tech, man, and I laid it out on the line against those guys, man, because it was the guys that I grew up with that went there and I went here. And I know J.C. Coleman, he was the number three or number four athlete coming out, and we played Pop Warner together. And me and him hated each other in high school. Like, we was on the same 7-on-7 team for the 7-5-7, and we was one of the top teams in the country, and we hated each other. Like, we got in a big argument, and he was calling me overrated on the 7-on-7 teams. Like, you don't even deserve to be number one in the state, blah, blah, blah. Me and JC cool now, so I can talk about this. But, like, we hated each other then. So when we got to college and we played against it, oh, my God. Like, that was, like, the hate was real. Like, it was crazy. And I remember my second year, JC got a sweep to my side. And me and him one-on-one on the sideline, I tried to break his neck. I still got the picture in my phone. Like, the hate for Tech, like, that shit is real, it's personal. I still have it to this day, and it'll never leave. Like, but no, like, speaking to a fan, man, like, we tried to win every one of those games. You know, we just didn't pull it out, bro. We just didn't pull it out, man.
Yeah, let me set the scene, because this is, I mean, at this point, it's like, your junior year, right? You'd already made the decision, so you know this is probably the last, maybe your last game, or hopefully not, right? But the Tech's coming in, they're looking for bowl eligibility too, right? You're in Lane Stadium, probably hate that even more than I do from what I just heard, so.
And it was a night
but
game,
like,
so
you guys
was always pissed that it was a night game.
Right. So you guys scored the go-ahead touchdown, but there's only a couple minutes left. And this is the strength of the team, right? And you're on that side because the team and to back you up a little bit, man, fans know not just these guys, the former players of that coach, and that he's, for better terms, difficult to work with. So it's kind of public knowledge on that bit when you guys talked about that earlier. So, but talk about, like, that last drive. Like, what's going on? What's going through your head? Like,
man, to know, to be that close, man, and I've been in those type situations since high school all the way up into the league. To be in, and I've always been on the side that has been up, that loses the damn game. I don't know if it's me. I have questioned myself thousands of times. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just bad luck, and God is just punishing me for some shit I did. Excuse my French.
No, you good.
Years before now. Like, bro, to have that cup within arm's reach, and I was hurt, man. Mm-hmm. I was hurting so bad that game. I feel like my arm was about to fall off. I tried to give it everything I had. That was one of my worst games of the year. But to know that we were that close and didn't pull it out, man, I was hurt. I mean, that was a heart wrencher, man. That was a heart wrencher. And that was the year that the streak really should have ended. Like, that was legit the year.
Yeah.
That was
no
legit.
Doubt.
Yeah,
no
my
doubt.
Wife will my wife will feel a little bit better knowing that you react that way and you're actually the player and I act that way when I'm a fan and I get upset about stuff like that too. So.
No doubt. All right. Well, Drew, thanks, man. We appreciate having you on, man, in that first segment of whose fan is this? And hopefully we'll get you back another time. All right. Eli,
thanks for having me on, guys.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, no doubt.
Nice to meet you, bro.
Get to that last segment. I am shut the hell up. I am underdog. Roll with it.
Did he hear you?
I don't know. Did you hear me?
Eli.
Say it again.
Oh, okay. We get to that last segment that we talked about. It's called Shut the Hell Up, I Am Underdog. Something that pisses you off, that gets under your skin, but you're going to overcome it anyway.
Man, being where I am today, I just don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing guys that I know, man, look, I don't pocket watch. I don't hate on no other man. I'm my own man, and I love where I'm at. And I'm confident, and I know that I belong in the league. And mm-hmm. I'm seeing some guys getting signed and some guys on rosters. And I'm like, yo, like, there's no way, bro. Like, where's the disconnect, man? So I made a decision. I got rid of my agent. And I got a guy that's going to be straight up with me, and I know who's going to work for me. And just being with him for 3 weeks, he got me a damn workout. So I know that it's not just me. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then I go back to think about, well, is it because I took a knee? What is it? You know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. and being on the streets, man, is hard, bro. Like, mm-hmm. it's
It's unlike what I thought it would be. You know, I thought I'd be cool. But I was depressed a little bit, man, a few months back and going through it mentally, man. But I just came within a – I just told myself, man, and I just got even keel about the situation and just said, if it's meant to be, it'll be. You know what I'm saying? So all I can do is control what I can control.
What would you control?
Working my butt off, going in. I got my bounce back. I got my hops back. I'm sprinting. I'm fast. I'm explosive. Yeah. I'm taking care of my body. And I'm just ready to go, man, when it's time to go.
No doubt. Look, you can control three things. You control three things. Your attitude, your effort, and your output. Mm-hmm. Anything 100%. Other than that is futile, and it's gonna frustrate the hell out of you. So
it's just fluff.
Knowing that you can control those three things, just rock with it, man. Just rock with it. And I cannot wait to hold your son for the first time, to get little nephew in my arms. You know, like I'm telling you, Hawk, the first time I held Zuri, dude, I don't know who was grinning more, me or her.
Yeah,
I mean for real. For real, bro. You'd have seen me. You'd have been like, Cub, you look goofy as hell over there right now. But, bro, I was so proud of that little. I was like, that's oh, love. My gosh. Look at this beautiful child, you know? And shout out to Kelsey, you know?
She's
doing the damn thing, holding the house down.
Yes, man. Sir.
Definitely tell her a shout out. Much love always. And, fam, we continue to, man, support you and love you. And thank you so much, brother. Continue to do the great work that you do, man. Continue mm-hmm. to lift as you climb. And just keep chasing greatness, man. No matter what. Like Ahmad always said, good is the enemy of great. Don't ever settle for that good shit, bro. Mm-hmm. No, well, don't they settle for mediocrity.
That.
Yeah,
take that goodness away from you. Greatness.
Exactly.
It's lasting, bro.
That's it. That greatness lasts. And look, we all wired to be great. But everybody don't tap into it, bro. They scared to go get it. Greatness not going to come to them. They waiting for it to come to them. It don't do that. It goes to the ones that are willing to put in the work. And you have always been that individual, both athletically and mm-hmm. as a man. So keep putting in that work as a father, a human being. And, you know, bro, you're doing God's work. So you stay vigilant and keep the grind steady.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you. Love you guys, man. Real talk. All
right, love you, too. Hey, man, love you, too.
That's friend. Real, man.
Mental health is real, bro. Mental health is real. Our culture don't respect mental health. They see that as being soft. No, mental health is real. Always make sure your mentals are straight, bro, because we play this violent game. We've been taught to be violent. And we've been taught to just be aggressive. And we've never been taught to seek out help for us to process the things that's going on in our mind, because we harbor a lot of bad things and we use it as fuel with this football thing. When you talk about mental healthness, bro, for real, like, seek somebody, make sure it's always in the right, you're always in the right mind, man, because it controls a lot, bro. Like, it can be detrimental to not only you, but to your loved ones and to everybody around you. But when you're Eli and you smiling and you joyful, just say you got your bounce back. And the reason why you said you got all that back, because you said my mental health is good. So that lets you know. Mental health is real, bro. So always make sure that's top priority, because your loved ones want to make sure that outside of football, that's what's most important. That's you. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. That's real, bro.
I'm happy that you're happy. And you my guy. So
that's real, man. That's real talk. No doubt. I appreciate y'all, man. That's real.
No doubt, man. PA, keep being great, fam. Keep being great.
Headache, goddammit. Headache.
Headache. Headache. Headache.
Oh, man. Right, hey.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been The Lockdown featuring T-Cub and the Ball Hawk.
Uh-huh! You already know what we do here.
No doubt, no doubt. With special guest Eli Harrell and super fan Drew Cassidy. We will catch you on the next one. Yeah. Thank you.